dealing with other cultures in a very sophisticated way. They were the first to do all of these things. And so they are very comfortable with dealing with all religions. And I grew up in Egypt. The one who sat next to me in third grade was a Jewish Egyptian. The one who sat next to me the other side was a Coptic, a Christian Egyptian, and I was Muslim Egyptian, and I never really thought anything of it. I mean, it just wasn't marked. It was all the better, because during my feast, they all come to me. During her feast, I go to hers, and we're all always celebrating. Three religions provide a lot of holidays, you know. And I think all the wedge that got thrown in there was all from the outside, and it is very sad. But part of this is the imaging that the Christian women are more westernized and are better equipped to deal with Western society. They are more advanced in their own systems. None of this research that has been done shows that anything like that. They are distributed the same way. They are all in the bottom or in the middle or on the top. Christians can be garbage people, or they can be leaders. It doesn't fit this image. But can you imagine being here and having to deal with that and then being a Muslim? So one of the things that we're always asked of me is, okay, I'm doing well, and Jishi knows how to speak, and say, you are Christian, aren't you? No, whoops, now how to deal with her? So what I'm talking about here is that the challenges that we have to face in this country is we have to deal with both racism and sexism at the same time. And I think this is one of the mistakes that, not the mistakes, it's maybe evolutionarily natural, that the feminist movement in this country, which was very successful in many ways throughout the world, brought to us an agenda that works very well for white middle class Americans, but it didn't work well for what is called now women of color. And the women of color, which includes all blacks and Hispanics and Asian Americans, felt left out. And there's a separate movement going on in a lot of literature. They call it women of color. They felt that the white middle class American women don't really understand, nor do they relate. Some of it is conscious and some of it is unconscious. You have to understand that the white middle class women are the same racists that we're talking about. It's very difficult for them to take, you know, to lift themselves from things that are unconscious and then look at women of color in a very objective way. So they are having a hard time also and trying. But the result of these tries is all tokenistic, so that for any session like this would have white middle class feminists, and then they'd, oh, we also need an Asian American. We also need a Jewish American. Well, Jews are part of this, but we also need a black. So we got tokenized, and I think the worst thing that can happen to us is to be tokenized. The other thing that is very bad that can happen to us is to remain invisible. And I think the Arab American women are among the most invisible. We are the most stereotyped, and we are the most invisible, and that is very, very dangerous. I think we should dare to speak out. And I think whenever you're discriminated against, you have to bring it up. And I think there's a lot that should be done. And I propose, as of this moment, that there would be something like an ADC Women's Caucus with a president and a vice president. Thank you.
Thank you, Fadwa. Our next speaker, Anan Amiri Jabara, is a national president and executive director of the Palestine Aid Society, a former researcher at the Palestine Research Center in Beirut, and executive director of the Jordanian Television. Dr. Jabara is the author of several studies in politics and economics in Palestine, Lebanon, and Jordan. She is also known to very many of you. Please help me in welcoming Anan.
Thank you, Noha. I think we're speaking in a time that where there's an uprising in the occupied territories, and it has been mentioned by many who had spoke at least this afternoon about the role of the women in the uprising. And in this occasion, I would like all of us to salute the Palestinian women in the uprising. And I would also like, before I start my speech, that this group will send a telegram to the women organization in the occupied territories, appreciating their role and telling them that we are with them. Also, I would like to take the opportunity of me being here. Yes, I will give you a name and address before I leave. I promise that. Also, I would like to make an announcement that, although this doesn't sound very relevant, but it is, and I explain it, that Dureid Laham will have a show in New York on the 3rd of April. That's Ghawar, known to all of you as Ghawar. And why am I announcing it? Because the funds that we will raise from that event and from other events will go to women organizations in the occupied territories to support them in their efforts. And Rabia there, Rabia Shafi from Palestine Aid Society, will have tickets, and we will appreciate that you help us in our effort to raise some funds. To go back to the women issue and Arab American women in this country, usually when we talk about Arab American women, we are talking about a very wide topic, because actually we're not talking about a cohesive group that have a lot in common. We do have something in common, that we all came from a certain background, which is from Arab countries. But the fact that some of us came 3 generations ago, some of us came from urban areas, some of us came from villages, some of us came from poor economic background, make us in a way not a cohesive group. Yet in the same time, we can be identified as Arab American women. Most of the time when we talk about Arab American women, there is a segment of that group taken as an example, or if you were stereotyped. Some of us, and those who we are here, do not represent in reality the Arab American woman. We are, if you want, the cream of a crop in a way, because we are the most educated. By the mere fact that we are here, we're participating in panels, we're members of organizations. However, there is a very large segment of the Arab American community who are recent immigrants, and these are the invisible. That's what we talked about, the invisible. These are the invisible and the larger community. And if we talk about reaching, how can we reach to that group? That group that tend to be stereotyped, tend to be oppressed, and tend to be excluded from any decision making within their ethnic group and within the larger society. Many people talk about Arab American women, and they talk about we have made it, and we are in our defense, because we feel in this society as Arab American, and especially as Arab American women, discriminated against and stereotyped, and we fight it by signaling the few who have made it. For example, oh, we have Mary Rose Okar. She's Lebanese. She's from ethnic background. She's a congressman, or we have so and so. We name the few to fight this stereotype, and I think the way to fight the stereotype is through organizations, and look at the organizations, Arab American organization, what they have done in that direction. Also, when we look at the Arab American groups, women groups, we have to look, did these women make it on their own? Many of us, we made it in a way on our own, either because we come from a middle class or upper class family, who had given us the opportunity to study and to go to universities. And in a certain way, we have reached certain position either in the larger society, American society. We have jobs, we can travel. But very little, I think, have been on the organizational level, and that's the issue I want to address. If we look at Arab American organizations, they all also vary from the national to the local to the church to the mosque. And in every single organization, we find that women are the backbone of these organizations. Even the mosques, which And for many people, represent the most conservative, we find, and I know in Detroit and in many other places, that women have been very, very active in these mosques, and they have done a lot of work. And this goes from the mosque to the church to the smaller organization that are organized on a village level. Or, for example, if we talk about Ramallah, Beit Hanina, the Biqa' organization, these are organized on a village level. Yet we find that women are very active in these organizations. If we take the larger organization, like take ADC, for example, the AAUG, Palestine Aid Society, we find that many women are very active in these organizations. The question is, to what extent have these women, when they are equal and as competent as men, reach a powerful position or a decision-making position? And if they have not, whose responsibility is that, and how can we accomplish it? Number one, we have to understand that men, if women are not in a decision-making position, if they are not in a powerful position, then men are. And they will not yield power. I mean, it's a simple fact that men will not yield power to women. Number one, even, I mean, in all societies, men are the group of people who have the power, who are in a position, in a decision-making position. So are these organizations, as organizations which are integrated, sexually integrated, address the issue? And how many of them have really allowed women to reach a decision-making? And I think very, very few. I'm proud to belong to one who has been headed by a woman, myself, Palestine Aid Society. And I'm proud to say that in Palestine Aid Society, in our national board, on most of our chapters, women are in a decision-making positions. And I think there is a reason, because I and a few other women, among them we have few here, Anan and Rabia and Aida, because we started this organization, there have not been discrimination against women. I don't think there's discrimination against men either. But when women are equal to men, as competent, they were able to reach a decision. There was no blocking in that organization. And that organization proved to be among the most respected organization in our community. And I bring it as an example to say that when women are allowed to reach a power position or a decision-making position, they are just as competent as men. And we have to fight for that. So within each organization, any national Arab American organization or Palestinian and Lebanese and Yemenis, there have not been conscious effort on the part of women themselves. Today they have been mentioned that the ADC should have a caucus for women, which is good. They have been, Ramallah Federation a couple years ago took a decision that there will be an organization of women, and that at least is an awareness on the part of the organizations and women in the organization that they have not been equal. And I think that's one challenge we do have and we have to address. And maybe one first step to address it is by creating these caucuses for women within these organizations. The other level of organizations has been in this country, there has been in this country, a number of Arab American organizations, and many of us have joined some of them. But I personally find out that there are many problems in these Arab American organizations for a number of reasons. Number one, these Arab American organizations tend to organize the middle class educated women. And if we want to talk about oppression of women and lack of opportunity for women, these are not the women who have the least. The least are those, as I said, more recent immigrants and most deprived socioeconomically groups in our society. So these organizations, Arab American organizations, they tend to organize middle class, and they dealt basically with women issue without dealing with the larger issue of a society. For example, they dealt with women issue in terms of cultural education, but they never get involved in local politics or the national politics of Arab American. And when they fought stereotype, their attempt to fight stereotype is to represent themselves as American women. In our mind, that women who have made it in this society are the women who are assimilated in a way, and they are like American women, in our mind and in the mind of many of our men, that that is a sign that we have made it. And I tend to disagree with that, because even if we have made it, quote-unquote, assimilated to be American, there is still a lot of inequality within the American society. The American women have not made it. And these Arab American organizations that tend to present Arab women and fight stereotype, but by we are assimilated and we are like you and we dress like you and we act like you, have not got involved, at least in the Arab, in the American women movement, that they're still up today fight for equality. There is no constitutional equality in the United States. So if we want to be assimilated, if we want to be larger of the greater society, fine, but at least let us get involved in the issue of women on the larger level, because even American women have not accomplished equality. In the other problem with Arab American organizations that have existed is that they have not been able to integrate, as I mentioned briefly, the larger issue of concern of the organization with the women issue. For example, let's take ADC as an example, because this is a convention for ADC. When we talk about the fight of, we don't want the stereotype of Arab American, okay? We established ADC as an organization to fight discrimination in this country against Arab. This issue was not tied up also to the issue of women, the stereotyping of women, because there's discrimination on two levels if you want to talk about women in particular. So one of the successes that was mentioned before, that women in the West Bank and women in Algerian Revolution, I really think we have a lot to learn from these organizations. And I am familiar with the Union of Women Work Committee. It is a woman organization that was organized in the occupied territories, in the West Bank and Gaza, to deal with the issue of women, equality of women, education of women, to deal with the problem of union women, but yet they were able to integrate that issue with the issue of liberation. So the women have a role in the liberation. So if we want to apply it in this country, the women have a role to play in whatever organization, whether it's be Palestine Aid Society, ADC, and AAUG, for example, with the women issue itself. So that's why we find that the Palestinian women, in spite of the fact that they not necessarily come from a middle class, the leadership does come from a middle class, and they are the educated women, but they reach the women in their totality as a half of a society, as a powerful group, that if it's organized on its own interest, the women interest, and tie up that interest into the larger national question, that's the only way to deal with women. Because you cannot come and ask women to be involved in politics while there are so many hindrances in their personal life. Nor you can come and liberate them, if you want, which I don't like the expression, or get them out of the discrimination they are in, if they are just going to do it for their own sake. What is the point? So the most important thing is to know, how do we integrate the activity of women or women into the larger issue, whatever the organization is dealing with. There have been, however, lately, in the last, I would say, 3-4 years, women organization, and basically they have been Palestinian and Lebanese organization, who are basically women organization, yet they address the national interest of this group, whatever they are. For example, the Palestinian community in this country is known to have the main concern to this community is the what's going in the occupied territories. So there have been attempts on many on behalf of many women in this country to organize women and to deal with the issue of deliberation, with the issue how do we support our people in the occupied territories, because this is an important issue for the Palestinian community. Yet in the same time, how can we deal with the issue that concern women in this country? For example, we have the Palestinian Democratic Women Organization. And unless we can tie these two issues, I think we will end up either with organizations like ADC or AAUG that have very few educated women. They are members, and if they are lucky enough, they could be a secretary or on the board of an organization, but they will never have a decision-making. or we will continue to forget the larger segment of our society, which are the new immigrants have been in their country, and these are the people who are really locked on their, in a way that they don't know their way out. We know our way out. We can fight, but these groups who do not know their way out. And I think the challenge for all of us is not to feel satisfied as individuals that we have made it, okay? Although, I mean, we have made it in a way, but we are also stereotyped. Because a woman, whenever a woman reaches a position, I mean, she's tough, she's not feminine, she's rude, she's aggressive. Fine. I mean, you get also stereotyped in that sense, but at least you have some kind of choice. And I think the issue among us women is to deal with this new segment of society that have been here and to create programs that address their needs as women and address the larger issue that we are concerned of. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Anand. Daughters in the Arab American society perhaps face the greatest conflict of all, because the expectations from them differ so drastically from the non-Arab classmates. Their non-Arab classmates. Their biggest challenge, I think, is that they're always trying to seek acceptance in both the Arab society as well as the American society. And it is understandable where they can sometimes feel torn between the two cultures. Particularly difficult it is for them to deal with that in their adolescent years. And here to talk to us about what it is like to grow up in this very complex tradition is a very articulate young speaker, Muna Asali. She is an undergraduate student at Georgetown University, where she is studying English literature. She is currently president of the youth section of the Association of Arab American University Graduates and has lectured on the subject of Arab American youth. She plans to pursue a graduate degree in comparative literature. Please help me welcome Muna Asali.
Today, if the topic is indeed gender roles and, as I hope, the definition of identity based upon these things, I would like to make a very small assertion, but I hope you will find it very important, as I do. Very quickly, when an 18-year-old male throws a rock at an Israeli soldier, he's a boy. When he's shot dead, he all of a sudden is a man. When the rite of passage is death, I think the American media should be very careful when they're throwing around the title boy, man, girl, woman, just as we all should. I'm here today to tell you a little bit about myself. My father, being a practical Arab man, studied medicine. My mother, a very practical woman, studied accounting. So in my family, there's a tradition of very practical studies. Because I care about the marketability of my degree, because I care about finding a good job in American society, I'm studying English literature. But seriously, education is of greatest importance for all Arab Americans, all Americans, all human beings on this planet. And the importance of development through education is asserted every day in our schools, from the time a child is 5 to the time a child is 55. As a student of English literature, I'm very familiar with the Western canon, albeit a male-biased and ethnocentric Western canon of literature. And I've recently become very familiar with a concept, a discipline that Edouard Said has vilified so well, Orientalism. And I'm asking you to take the opportunity with me to get an in-depth look at Orientalism as it works vis-a-vis the Arab woman. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, proto-feminist novel. In many of the university women's studies programs, this is required reading. And one part, the monster, who, by the way, in case you're ever watching Jeopardy or something, the monster's name is not Frankenstein, that's the doctor's name. That'll get you $200. At one point, the monster learns to read and write. And the way he does is very interesting. He watches a young girl, an Arab girl, who's taught by her Swiss lover reading and writing. And he hears the story of this poor girl named Safi and how she yearned to be free. And I quote, "Safi related that her mother was a Christian Arab, seized and made a slave by the Turks. Recommended by her beauty, she had won the heart of the father of Safi, who married her. The young girl spoke in high and enthusiastic terms of her mother, who, born in freedom, spurned the bondage to which she was now reduced. She instructed her daughter in the tenets of her new religion and taught her to aspire to higher powers of intellect and an independence of spirit forbidden to the male followers of Muhammad. This lady died, but her lessons were indelibly impressed on the mind of Safi, who sickened at the prospect of again returning to Asia and being immured within the walls of a harem, allowed only to occupy herself with infantile amusements, ill-suited to the temper of her soul, now accustomed to grand ideas and a noble emulation for virtue. The prospect of marrying a Christian and remaining in a country where women were allowed to take a rank in society was enchanting to her." And there we have it.
Proceed to tape B for continuation of this presentation.